Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 3, hosted by myself, The Last Skeptic, with very, very special guests Asim Chowdhury and Koji Radical. The following recording is unscripted, unadulterated, and recorded live in front of a bunch of my mates in my front room in East London, and thus, there's a lot of sweary language. Thank you very much to Red Leg Rum for providing the booze, and big up to the show producer, Seb White. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 3 of the Thanks for Trying podcast, hosted by myself, The Last Skeptic, with my very special guests, Asim Chowdhury and Koji Radical. Right, okay, all right. I just, you know, before we started, I was about to comment on Koji that you actually sat in the style of AC Slater, but I don't think you might be too young for a Saved by the Bell.
I'm not too young for Saved by the Bell. I've watched me some Saved by the Bell.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How deep are you with Saved by the Bell?
Couple seasons.
Okay. Yeah. All right, here's the test. All right, I'll ask Asim first. How do you feel when I say the name Kelly Kapowski?
Wow. I say Kelly Wowski. Kelly Kapow.
And how do you feel, Koji Radical, when I say the name Kelly Kapowski?
Semi.
Semi Kapowski. Well, thank you guys for coming down today. I appreciate the solidarity in the rum drinking cause.
Yeah, man.
You've just finished. People Just Do Nothing. Mm-hmm. The filming.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
How was it?
Yeah, it was good, brother. It was series 3. Mm. So it's like, it feels familiar, but it's like just kind of like reuniting with all your boys, your friends, with a lot of the same people who did, you know, the last series, you know, same director, obviously same production company, producers, makeup people. So it's like a big reunion. We're like a big family. Mm. When you planned it for so long, because we kind of had a bit of a while to plan it.
Yeah.
And even when we plan stuff well in advance. So like, say if we're doing like, you know, like now we've got series 3 and series 4 commission.
Yeah, I heard.
And when we found that out as a double commission, we'd kind of sat in the room and had like literally 100 storylines on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
And just picked them out. Plus this stuff that we want to do, that we kind of, we like in a cocky way, we're like, now you know what, save that for series 3. Yeah. Save that for series 4.
Yeah.
So when we actually get there, some things we implement, some things we like, let's save that. So it was really cool, man.
With such a strong position, do you find that the writing process is a little bit, it not easier in a way, but like more fluid, because the pressure's off because you've got this fan base now?
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think that can work for you and against you, because obviously, like you were saying before, the pressure is there.
Mm.
So when you have got a very loyal fan base and they, you know, they're hardcore, the people who like the show, is because it's a cult. It's a bit of a cult show, you know. So it's not everyone knows about it. It's still a bit niche.
Yeah.
But the people who know about it, they fuck with it heavy. Like they're like, we know, we'll quote you this and that. You know, they'll come up to you. I remember the YouTube shit. So there's pressure in that, but then also you got to remember, like, these characters we've been doing since 2009, you know, 2010. So it's like, you know, you feel so confident with the character that you can put them in any scenario. You can ask me any question and I can just snap into that character. It's like it's just like an alter ego for all of us now.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the writing process, we have Steve, who is our main writer.
Yeah.
And then we all implement stuff. So, you know, we go and give all the storylines, you know, then he gives us a draft. We come back, we edit it, we add talking heads. It's a very collaborative effort, but we've got a good system now of everyone knows what they need to do. And I think that works with any creative kind of project you're doing. If you know your role and you feel confident in your role, then, you know, getting that material and getting those jokes and those storylines is, you know, it becomes not easy, but it becomes fluid. And I know they like certain things that I'll do or certain things that Grindr or Beats would say, not in a cocky way, just in a way that I know we know our audience, and that's very important. You have to know what your audience. It's been a blessing, man. It's just, you know,
sick. And a BAFTA nomination as well.
Yeah, that's
not too shabby.
That is a madness, because, you know, we normally only this year we've started getting nominated for shows. Before that, it was just like under the radar, would never get anything, you know, which is cool. We don't, you know, we're not part of that, you know, that kind of, in terms of British comedy, there's always been a system of, you know, you go to, you know, drama school, then maybe you go to Edinburgh, and then you do this, and they're all very intellectual from a certain class system as well. It's always been that way. I'm not saying that's anything wrong with it. Some it's of our greatest comedians and shows, they've come from that that very esteemed comedy background. We're different. We're just kids from London, like, you know what I mean, started rapping back in the day, and then instead of making tunes, which we should have been doing, we started fucking around doing stupid characters, prank calling, and obviously our obsession with documentaries and comedy, and then, you know, you mix that together. But yeah, the BAFTAs are madness. Like, we ain't gonna win it. We are not gonna win it.
I mean, you don't know.
Well, here's a funny thing though. My producer said this to me. Basically, the shows that are nominated is People Just Do Nothing, Peep Show, and Peter Kay's Car Show, Car Share. So you know when they're going to be announcing the winners, they're going to go, and the winner is P, and I'm going to get up, and they're going to go Peep Show, and I'm going to go, all right. So we're like, we're just waiting for that moment.
You know what though? Nomination is, you know, like, that's fucking incredible.
It's not the reason we do it, but at the same time, it's nice to be acknowledged.
It's 100% the reason why I do anything. Just literally on the off chance that I might be nominated for a BAFTA or a Grammy, or, you know, anything. I just want an award. I want best kebab shop of the year. I want whatever award they will give me.
A Doner kebab statue.
Yeah, like, I want it.
With grease as well. They add the grease. It rotates.
I want that.
Nah, it's a blessing, bro. You know, it's just humble. You just humbled us. That'll be all right.
Yeah. And Koji, you were just saying as well, you're opening for Ghostface. Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm excited as I am about any show. Do you know what I mean? You kind of got to go and do it and not leave being the support act.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You have to leave with the intention of making everyone feel like you should have been the headline. So Ghostface is worthy competition.
I think so. You opened for Saul Williams, didn't you?
Yeah.
And
he
brought you out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was dope.
Sick.
It's weird, man, because like all of that stuff is really surreal, because I have really weird heroes, if that makes sense. Like, there was people that, for whatever reason, when I was getting heavily into music, I was just listening to on rotation, and they weren't not artists that, especially people my age, would necessarily gravitate towards or be extremely knowledgeable in, but I like them. So like, people like Saul was one of them, another guy called Natty, who's a reggae singer. I was really, really into it at one point, and Natty put Saul onto my stuff.
Oh, sick.
And then randomly, I was doing a festival with BBC Radio 6, and me and Saul were sharing a dressing room. So
what?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Madness. And then I think I'd already been booked for the show by that point.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, hi, how you doing?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Williams, how you doing? And then he was like, oh, play me some music that you're listening to. Yeah. So I started playing some real like new school shit, like, I was playing like Daniel OG Plan.
Right.
He's only with me because he knows that I got a plan. And he was just literally, you know when they do that kind of like A&R tap where he's just wiggling his foot?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I like this, man. I like this. I was like, all right, champ. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know what the fuck this is saying.
You're just waiting for someone to come in and interrupt.
Yeah, literally waiting for someone to come take you on stage. But we've done a show. And even that was a pretty surreal experience, because like one of my bigger records is called Bamboo, and the whole last verse was inspired by one of Saul's most kind of famous poems.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like that real kind of like, wow, okay, cool, ticked.
It's mad that, like, that shit comes around full circle. It's very mad.
To be able to tick that box this early as well is kind of
crazy.
It's fun, yeah.
Because when people ask me like, what is your sound like? Who are you most like?
Yeah.
That I'm like, who can I compare you to? And I'm like, somewhere between Saul Williams and like Master Killer.
That's a good shout. I had that.
You got the intensity. Presence, the intensity.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You can, the clarity, and kind of push the T as well, because you got you can hear every word. The clarity's there, but you're also saying some stuff.
Yeah. You know me, man. Like, the music was an accident. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it was an accident. And I think my background and other stuff kind of helped me make music more, I'd say, theatrically.
Yeah.
if that makes sense. So being able to kind of like control my voice from like a theatre background kind of made it easier for me to sense where I needed to be on the record. So I wish it came from like me listening to a bunch of like legends and going, yeah, I want a bit of that, but it was just like
I didn't get that impression though. Like he was saying, I couldn't really put my finger on it.
Yeah.
Even to the point when I first watched it, because he sent me the stuff, and I was, and at first it was just kind of like it was so new to me and alien. I was like, what's this? Yeah. And it was like literally you can't like place it, but now you're talking about the theatrical stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely came across.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I used to really like
for people that don't know. So you used to be an artist, and you you obviously direct videos.
Yeah, yeah. So I started off doing fine art and illustration. My sister got me into dance really, really young. So I was dancing for about 9 years while I was still doing art and illustration and that creative direction and that. I was doing all that really early. So I was like teaching art from like 16, and I think I was like, I was a board member and chairman for a Victorian theatre.
Wow.
I was like 20. So I was like on like...
A chairman?
Board. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was long.
Please tell me you wore little glasses and
corduroy. I always came as road as possible. Like, because it was all like proper execs on the board as well. Like even I think one of the owners of Shell was on the board.
What?
Or something like that. And like I just come like just literally just mash up from the day before. Do you know what I mean? Just sitting in this meeting trying not to fall asleep, but like it was, they like new ideas, I had them.
You've always been AC Slater, I think this is right. We just established.
Man, yeah, Nickelodeon did shape me.
Wow, I said the other day, I said something to a girl, she was talking about this, her friend, his name was Roger, and he was a dickhead, and I was like, go home, no, Roger. No, and she was like, what do you mean? Go, what do you mean? And I was like, fucking hell, you have to
back away.
You are a baby. You're a sperm right now. You're an M, like you're.
I have to walk away. There's so little old things that like even when I'm out, if I'm talking to a girl and she doesn't know what the Fresh Prince is, I'm scared.
It's a madness.
It's either that or if they don't know who David Attenborough is.
Just bringing up David Attenborough. I don't. You know, normally I don't like name dropping. Yeah. No, this is David Attenborough. This is David Attenborough.
This is fine.
This man. Yeah. Let me just say something. Yeah. You know, like we all like. You know, the whole obsession with celebrity and all this stuff. Like we are in that generation now, aren't we? Where, you know, dumb people get famous. Stupid people get famous.
Yeah.
You just got to look good. You got to have something. You got to have an Instagram. You get fucking dogs with millions of followers and that. That's all good. But all I'm saying is, we live in that kind of. This man. Yeah. I think his achievement. It's like you can't understand. Like, say if the world were just completely, you know, it was just finished, and all we had left was David, or the next species, whoever came. Yeah. All they had was David Attenborough documentaries. That amount of wealth of knowledge that he's given to us as a civilization is incredible. So he's definitely.
It makes me think that. Did he give it to us, or does he just have a really nice voice?
No, okay, so then that brings me to it. I was working in Chiswick, because before I was doing all the writing and acting shit, and it was just like a normal TV job. It was an ITV, it was like broadcasting, so it was like technical, when the shows come in, make sure everything's all good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Loved the job, but a very technical, not creative job, but good, you know, good job. And he came to our Chiswick, because he lives in Richmond, isn't it?
Right.
And he came and he did an hour and a half talk.
Yeah.
And it was raffles for the ticket, yeah. And then I, you know, obviously I missed out on the raffle, but I paid, you know what I mean, to go. And I was like, paid someone 30 quid for their ticket. It was free, you know, but I paid. Then I sat front row, with my friend, and I was just in awe of him. And then at the end, there was a moment to ask questions, and the enthusiasm this man had about nature. He was talking about when he all started, he was just in his back garden. He used to dig up fossils, and the love the man had for the earth and for like just life, all this kind of things. But now I went to chat to him, and I was like, and I said to him, I went, D-bro. And I called him again, and he went deeper. He went, I like that name. And I can't even remember what I asked him, because I was just in awe. But it was one of those moments where I've met during my little whatever I've done. I've met some famous people. Yeah. I've met some, you know, a few heroes of mine. But this man, I crumbled.
I mean, and of course, that kind of leads me to another question that I have for you. Of course, you're in Hof the Record.
Yeah,
with David Hasselhoff. Come on.
Yeah, that's mad. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's a bit of a shame because the show is on Dave. They've marketed it as this you know, this David Hasselhoff show, and everyone on the surface, if you watch the trailers, you think, oh, it's a reality show.
Mm.
But this show is like a Curb Your Enthusiasm esque mockumentary where he's basically completely taking the piss out of himself.
Okay,
and it's like, yeah, he's just ripping himself, and it's, we love that as Brits.
Yeah,
we, you know, we, if you can take the piss out of yourself, that's self deprecating kind of like, we like that. That endears us. You know what I mean? It's like you don't take yourself too seriously. And he's done all of that. And I'm really proud of it, because series one, I did like a, you know, a bit of additional material and improv. And series two, they really let us get involved creatively. So we were sitting there, storylines and loads of stuff. So it's, I'm really proud of it. I mean, it's, you know, it's filthy. My mum hates it because the stuff I say, because I play like a Terry and he's a cab driver and he's fucking filthy. Do you know what I mean? Everything he talks about, it's just sex, lads. It's a kind of a spoof on lad culture, because I find that quite fascinating, that lad culture. I think we all have it in us a little bit. You know, we get a bit lad. You got to watch yourself like, oh my God.
How many fisting jokes did you make?
No fisting jokes. No fisting jokes. I made a few micro dick jokes. I made a few blowjob jokes. I made a danger wank joke.
Oh yeah, you have to.
I was like, everyone loves a danger wank. You know what I mean? You leave the door open a little bit and you want to get caught. Oh, yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it's, yeah, that's in episode one, actually. But
starting strong.
And the Hoff, like, you know, everyone says, what's he like? What's he like? For me, he was a legend because he is a lad. He is an abs. He's one of the ultimate lads. He's Baywatch. He's like, he's like, you know, when you think of a man, you think of like, you know, old school. And it's just, he was a G, man. He likes people just do nothing. That's, you know, sick. And he's a fan. I gave him a crop tee, rocked it, he put on his Twitter and all that.
I saw that.
He was blessed, man. And he could take the piss out of himself.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff in the show that happened to him in real life.
We've
actually had to tone down some of it because he's like, no, you can't. Don't put that in. Like, you know, because it's like too real for him, right? You know?
Do you think he ever banged Pamela Anderson?
That was the first in episode one. In episode one of the beginning of the show, the first thing you see, he comes out of the airport and you think he's in this limo and the limo drives off and I'm there with a sign saying Hoff and I'm like, all right, Hoff. And I'm like, the character's a fanboy.
Yeah.
But like in a really, really kind of a bit creepy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fucking hell, is it really, are you a hologram? Like, can I touch you? And then he gets in the car. The first question I ask him is, Hoff, mate, did you bang Pamela Anderson? Was she the biggest prick tease in the world? And it's just like, that's the first thing you know straight away.
Great minds.
Oh, that's the question everyone wants to ask him, though, isn't it?
Everyone.
But people probably don't ask him. But then in the show, we thought it'd be funny if his cab driver, the first thing he says is that. So,
and he's cool and he's just a nice dude.
Oh, he's just a naughty. I mean, you know, he's so famous, though. Mm. It's ridiculous how famous. We were filming this one scene and he caused three accidents because we were in New Malden. Outside a kebab shop. Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, imagine that. And then one guy on the one bike, you know, when you do the double looks, the guy was on this bike and he went like that, and then he went like that, and he went straight into another car. And then that car went into this other car. And then I saw a woman fall over as well when she saw him. Just fell over. Just stacked it. No, but he is like, and we were on this rooftop and a drone came up and it was paparazzi drone. And it's like, it's a horrible level of fame, though. I don't think anyone would want that kind of fame.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't live, you can't do anything, you know?
Because you must be experiencing, so, you know, because you're on the come up, you're on the rise. And I'm not saying you're the
you're
new
on the Hoff level.
David Hasselhoff, which you might be soon. But you must be experiencing some weird stuff from people right now.
Yeah. I had one scenario where I was in a restaurant and the waitress basically tried to take me into the back bit of the restaurant and have her way with me.
Oh, wow.
She gave me a discount on my food. she actually took her break.
Yeah.
So that way she can come and chill near us when I was eating and stuff, which is weird.
Wow.
I just write poems, so I find it weird.
Wow. How do you after you've had sex with her, how do you react to that scenario?
I was saying, how did you get the discount? Something you had to give.
I do what every man does after sex and I cry to myself.
Totally legit, yeah.
there's weird things that, do you know, it's not even weird, you just find yourself in conversations for too long.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So a conversation will start with, I love this, as in, I love your project, I love your video, I love this. And then, because that person doesn't want you to walk away, they loop that same fact that they just love whatever it is that they've done over and over again.
Yeah.
And kind of try and add a little bit more detail every time they do.
They want to be friends.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, there's only so many times you can say thank you before you just feel like a dickhead.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I experience it is like, obviously, I play a character. Mm. Your music is very expressive, so they feel like they know you.
Yeah.
Right, and which, that's a weird thing as well. You know when you meet someone and they know a lot about you.
Yeah.
With me, it's different because I'm playing a character. And like I said, this is one of the first interviews I've actually done out of character. I haven't really ever done, because I try and keep the character real.
Yeah.
But because of that kind of, whatever you want to call it, that character, that world we've created, when people meet us, they expect,
you know, me to be like, oh, mate, it's Tribody G. But because I'm just like a normal guy from Hounslow, like, you know, they don't really know what to say to me. Yeah, so I'm like a massive disappointment, like a massive letdown. Mm. When I feel bad. I'm like, I apologize. I'm really sorry. I'm not.
Do they, are people like, do the bit, do the bit?
Well, sometimes when they get really drunk. But that's why it can get a little bit weird because obviously, you know, Chibadi speaks with an accent.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get some gurning white bears coming up with bean stains down their top and they're like, oh, Chibadi buddy. And I'm like, oh, please, bruv, do not do an Indian accent right now. But like, it's
borderline.
Out. Yeah, borderline. But the intention is, there's no harm in it. It's out of love. They love it so much. Yeah. I had that just the other day and the guy was like, I'm your biggest fan. Took a picture. I recorded a video message for him. Mm. All that, then at the end he was like, thank you so much, Jihadi G. And I was like, Jihadi G. I didn't even correct him, I just went,
you're just like, sure.
And I went, Jihadi G is a cool name, but it's not my it's not my name.
He sounds like a member of Tupac and the Outlaws, like without
Jihadi
a doubt.
G,
like Hussein Fadel, like,
Jihadi G, baby, woke up.
No, I had one once, this was the most backhanded compliment ever. There was a guy was like, oh my god, skeptic, I want a photo, can I get a photo? And I was like, alright, this is weird, like, sure. And then we took a photo, and as we were taking the photo, he just whispered in my ear, he goes, you've put on a lot of weight since I last saw you.
What the fuck?
What do I say at that point? Do I just walk out of the photo? What happens there?
But you know what? That's just weird people, man. Backhanded compliments is just... But what was the even? What's the point? It's just,
why do that?
It's a power thing. It's
because
a power thing.
Because people want to be your friend, and as soon as they're inside your world... Then they're like, "Well, I can do whatever I want."
Mate, backhanded compliments is the especially when like you know like the people come up, they firstly be like, "No, like yeah, your show's all right, man." They're like, obviously it's like simple, like kind of simple basic. They're obviously like you know you kind of. He was like, you know, I'm with me. And then it comes out at the end. He goes, yeah, because the thing is, you know, I'm a writer as well and I'm actually doing a little pilot with my... And then you're thinking, oh, here we go. It's the bitterness creeping in. And you're like, without that little bit at the end, I would have just been like, fair enough, it's your opinion. But it's not. It's actually, it's bitterness coming out. Yeah. It's like weird backhanded compliments. Like, why? It's just weird, man. Yeah. Life,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Strange conundrum.
Do you get poets and rappers doing the same?
Yeah, because people will do it on dumb stuff that I don't care about, and I think once my expression doesn't change, it's kind of disheartening for them. But they'll just do like dumb shit. Like I'm basically waiting to be famous enough to not have a Twitter or Instagram account or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I don't promote my social media handles at all. So I have like a moderately decent.
Yeah.
If you do stuff, kind of following online and that. And people will try and bring that up as like a thing I should care about. And I'm like, yo, listen, like I could go anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere and I'm good. No, do you know what I mean? You can't do that online. Do you know what I mean? Like, what am I gonna do? Oh, I'm safe on Google.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? It don't matter. Like, I wanna be safe from fucking like Hounslow to Peckham to fucking Scunthorpe or wherever. Like, do you know what I mean? If I wanna walk around in my boxes, no one's gonna touch me because like, do you know what I mean? Because real life says I'm okay. Like, do you know what I mean? But then people will always try to be like, oh, like, oh, Bamboo's a great video. Why doesn't it have a million views? Like, did you watch it a million times?
Yeah.
Because if the answer is no,
that is the weirdest background to compliment.
Yeah, it's ever. Like, why doesn't your thing have more? Like, I don't know.
How am I supposed to answer that?
Yeah, I just got life. That's my answer to everything.
that old thing.
People get caught up on numbers life. And statistics so much. Yeah. We're so much in that generation where
how many like your album sales? People always want to know. I don't even know my album sales.
But you don't want to because album sales mean they're cool right now, man. It's ridiculous.
But I purposely didn't find out. Even after it charted, I didn't find out.
No. Don't ever look.
I'm never going to look.
Because like, you know, I said this, I was complaining one time, I think it was like Christmas dinner or something, like I was chatting to my mum and I was like, oh, you know what? My videos only hit like 10,000 views and like no one really cares. And then she goes, are you complaining that like 10,000 people watched your video?
Yeah, exactly. You've got to put it into perspective.
Yeah, put it in perspective. That's crazy. So I thought, you're right, it's fine. Doesn't matter.
But in a way, like with that, it does matter. But at the same time, it doesn't, you have to always remember that things aren't always, everyone in this generation wants everything now. Like instant, you know, it's an instant gratification thing. Where we want our food now, we want our music now, we want our movies now, we want our love now, we want our sex now. Everything's at a click of a button. Like, bruv, like our old YouTube stuff, like when we put that out, we got like fucking like 2,000 views in like 2 years.
Yeah.
And this is now, I mean, now we've privated it, it's not online, but it's got millions and millions of views. But that's after everything a few years. And we had a surge. It just happens, man. Yeah, it's like, it's a slow burner. And I think that, you know, the slow, what they saw, you know, that saying about the slow burning candle, it lights the longest. It's like, you don't want to just be out there, light it and gone. Like, your video is, that's levels. Like, your video is levels, man. It takes, you know, that's effort and like a lot of, like, same thing with our, with our, with our art. Like, we put fucking time into this shit. So I waited that long to create it. I wait longer for people to catch onto it as well. And it will, man. It will. Do you know what I mean?
There's no statistics in life for how many times you've heard, like, Lauryn Hill, that thing.
True. Exactly.
You can't, there's no countable figure on that at all, ever, in life. And I want the same thing in terms of effect, so I'm never bothered. But that's the most backhanded that I feel, like, because the rest of them comment. Like I'm too sharp when it comes to sarcasm, that even if a backhanded compliment comes to me, I'm like back serving it like tennis. I'm like,
see that.
Oh, you're skinny now. Well, bit of chub under the neck, but like, whatever, fuck it, don't like those shoes.
And then you're there stuck in a passive aggressive argument for 20 hours.
Just walk away and just, as you're leaving, just go, what are those? And just, I just keep walking. I just keep walking away. Don't look back once.
I mean, that's a brilliant idea. Yeah.
Just get quicker.
Or just I think it says more about the person giving the backhanded compliment than it does about you.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's about their insecurities, it's about their weird power thing. Mm. Like, just be happy for someone. What is it that? And plus, you know what?
People have to be involved. That's why.
They have to be involved. They have to have this thing. You know, I learned this from quite a young age, and I'm happy I learned this. You know, there's a few ways, but I think there's two main ways you can react to other people's success, especially people you know.
Yeah.
It feels like a personal thing. It feels like you were on that journey with them. Yeah, why are they up here? And why am I still struggling? It's two ways you can deal with it. You can be a jealous little bitch, or you can be inspired by that. I mean, like, look, my boy did that. Yeah. Like, we're from the same ends. You know what I mean? We both grew up the same way. He's doing that. I'm inspired by that. You know what I mean? Exactly. And that's the way. If you have that mentality through life, it's always going to help you. Just be happy for the person.
Like my boy, Franz, he's an actor. And like, he was doing big things from early. Like, I think he was in college when he got his first like major movie role, and I'm there like going to do exams and stuff like that, and he's like, I'm seeing pictures of him on set doing like crazy things. Yeah. Like, our trajectories mad, but like in different ways that there was, it's weird. Like, I feel like if I spent more time focused on why that wasn't happening to me, I would have done less.
100%. You sit there, you start thinking, why not me? What's wrong?
Exactly. Yeah. But I was literally, you had to go back into my mind frame and go, actually, fuck it. Like, what, 10 years? Not even 10 years. Like, give us like 2 years. Like, I'm just going, do you want to meet up in Tunisia real quick? Just for no reason. Just fuck it. Let's go to Tunisia. Get some ice cream. Come back. And I want to be able to do all of that stuff and not tweet none of it.
Yeah.
And not Instagram none of it, not Snapchat none of it. I just want to go and do it.
I think that's such a I'm not at that place yet. I wish I'd be at that place where I can enjoy my life without letting other people know I'm enjoying my life. Well, that's it's bad. It means that I'm not content. I think a lot of people aren't content.
Yeah.
So you use that social media for validation and be like, I'm here, I'm doing this, validate me. Yeah. Why? But it was like, we had like MySpace and MSN. That wasn't like an everyday update thing of what you're doing. It was more of a connect thing.
Huh? I had bare girlfriends.
Bro, that's what MSN was.
I was dishing out that love. You see the little love button?
Yeah. Have your status and that. I like the appearing offline and then appearing online to get her attention. And then be like, and she's like, oh my God,
how much you might have another situation on MSN, and you put your other situation as your display picture because you're trying to wife her up as the main thing.
Oh, wow.
And then you've got to tell the other girl that's your cousin or something. Until they bump into each other.
Yeah, then it all,
That was real tough. That was hard back in the day.
Wow.
ASL.
That was the killer.
ASL.
If your girl added you on MSN and said ASL, she was about it.
Because
at that point, she didn't even know whether you were male or female.
Your age or your anything.
Three major details from you. Are you of age? Check.
All right, 19 male from Hounslow.
Do you have a gender? It's not even like, are you male? Do you have a gender? Check. And how much do I have to pay to get to you? And back in the day, you could run game for 40. Bus travel was 40p.
But how old are you?
23.
That's mad though, because like, I'm 29. I feel like that's, you're young for that, that 40p and the MSN generation. Or maybe I'm just
you know about it though.
He was woke from age.
So that's 5 years. So I guess it's not, I say your generation, but I don't feel like your generation and my generation are that far apart.
No, no, no.
It's like,
it's when you get to the 18 and the 19 year olds and you see babies.
I get confused because like it feels like the, I feel like at 23, you man might have lived more things than I may have at this point, but then I'm exposed to more things than you guys might have been.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? So the age thing starts to dissipate where
kids
are doing mad things.
Like, and my little sister, she's 7 years old. She was on the other day on her on my mum's iPad and she was doing a vlog and she was going, "Hi guys, okay, make sure." she was going, you know the rhythm they have, the vloggers. Make sure you like, comment and subscribe. And I'm like, what is going on? Then I caught her. She was like really embarrassed. She's really shy. And I was just like, that's mad. We had Etch-a-Sketch of shit. That was our iPad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
we had mad chalkboards. That was our iPad. Yeah.
Wow. That's,
it's crazy. It's very interesting.
I think I've met some really like immature 35, 40 year olds who haven't experienced life. So I think it's, you know, it's all, it's all it is all relative, like, big time.
Yeah,
I guess I was doing some mad shit by the age of fucking 13, 14. So, you know,
I was a good youth though. Yeah, I didn't drink till 18.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was a good youth.
Sick. Was it the first? So I don't really remember the first time I had a drink.
I drank a WKD and everyone stood around me like I was gonna die.
Wow.
The blue one.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. What other WKDs are there?
Like red one, white one.
No one really drinks those. It's, you drink Smirnoff Ice and Blue WKD. Yeah,
it's all about the blue.
Wow.
Sorry, yeah, I just totally hijacked your story. So you drank a Blue WKD and you became a man.
I had fornicated before I drank alcohol.
Literally that day.
That's deep. That's good. Normally they go hand in hand. They normally go hand in hand.
That came at 16.
Yeah.
That kind of manhood. Lol. And the second kind of manhood came at 18.
No one, you know,
18.
No one got that, but okay.
See what you did there.
Oh, yeah, clever.
Smart.
Oh, yeah. Giggity.
It's London life, you know, it's not your average kind of like life, you know, growing up in London, you know, you do some weird shit at weird times. You know, I smoked weed for the first time when I was like 11, you know,
and
like,
some
weird shit and I can't smoke it anymore.
What was I doing? I just cared about Power Rangers them times.
So did I.
I love Power Rangers.
Yeah.
I remember doing mad shit. I remember, like, we were talking about this the other day. We smoked a zoo in KFC once back in the day in the smoking area. We were year nine. We bunked school when we smoked, and we were like, you just didn't give a fuck back then. And, like, there was
a smoking area in KFC.
Yeah, of course. Mm. Years later, we're like, did we fucking smoke a zoo in KFC when we were 15? They're like,
why was there smoking?
We did.
Where would you put a smoking area in KFC?
There was a smoking area right at the front in KFC Hounslow High Street.
Wow.
If you know back then you'll know. Yeah, people used to go there.
Wow.
Yeah, we used to just, it's just weird kind of shit they used to do. And you're like,
I remember when they made it I don't know what it was like to smoke inside prior to them making it illegal, but I remember the effect of them making it illegal to smoke inside.
Kicked off.
Mm. Yeah, that was funny as fuck.
But I actually love going to smoking area when I'm out now. I think it's one of the best places to be when
that
you're out.
That is where the magic happens.
It's
the
social, man. It's a mad social, yeah.
Positions
yeah.
that you can actually be social when you're out.
It's true. That's true.
I remember smoking on planes.
That was
weird. Yeah, really, really weird. And when I went to Syria to play a show, and on the way back, Syrian Airways still allowed people to smoke.
Wow.
And this was 2010.
Fucking hell.
On a plane.
That is so mad.
In a like pressurized environment.
I think I'd hate that. I'd definitely hate that. But I hate flying. So it's
same.
Man.
What do you do when you fly then if you hate it?
I don't know, man. I think music obviously helps a lot.
I say Valium.
But we had it. Yeah, I mean, that would help definitely. Does anyone really enjoy flying? I never really.
Last time I flew, I fell asleep. Woke up in the country I was meant to be in.
That's the best. I can't sleep on the plane because I'm too paranoid. I'm like, if I just wake up
in case they need you to fly the plane.
Yeah, exactly.
I think weird shit. When I get paranoid,
yeah,
but stuff like that, I feel like someone's gonna pee on me.
Why Why would they do that?
Why does anyone do anything?
Yeah. It could happen, bro. I'm not feeding your paranoia, but that's why I don't sleep, though.
Because we're in like a social media age where people will do anything for like revlogs.
If me and you ever do shows abroad, I promise you that I'll keep an eye out.
Please.
Piss
for
watch.
Anyone.
Yeah.
Piss watch.
See, the thing with me on planes, I'm also paranoid because I know people are afraid of me on the plane. Yeah, right. So I'm paranoid of their paranoia. Right. So I'm making sure that I'm extra non-terrorist. But doing that, I look even more bait. You know what I mean? So I know that I'm going to get pulled by security. Okay, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
Then when I'm on the plane, it's like I've got a big bag and people are looking. But I've had it all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I get it.
How was it in America? Was it awful?
A fanny pack.
And whenever I go to America, it's always peak. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, always get pulled for it. But it's just something you get used to, isn't it?
Because like, even though like I've got, obviously I'm pale as fuck, but with an Arabic last name, I get pulled aside.
Yeah, you will.
Every flight.
Yeah.
Every single flight. I got kept in a room in Washington DC for 2 hours, like questioned. And the weirdest one was when I was on my way to, I think it was like Thailand or something, or like to Malaysia or something. And I got in Heathrow through security and I went up to I could see the plane. I was about to board the plane and these two like guys in suits came up to me and are you Corinne? And I was like, yeah. How did they even know that? And they go, we got your name on our list.
Oh my God.
And I looked over the list and it was just my name. And I was like, sorry, mate. I think a list is more than one name.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, yeah, we have to search you again. And I was like, okay, sure. So I had to look through my stuff. And then they go, are you Muslim? And I went, nah. And they go, are you Arabic? And I went, well, you know, it's like my dad's side of the family, whatever, and Arabic last name. And he goes, okay, cool. Do you speak Arabic? And I went, nah. And then this white guy spoke to me in Arabic as if to catch me out. And I went, bruv, I have no idea what you're saying. And he went, all right, cool. And then he left me alone. Didn't even search my bag.
Bruv, they don't fuck about out there, man.
Mad. That was in England.
That's mental. Yeah.
I had it. So they said, they went through my stuff and I had this... my barber's in Hounslow, his name's Al Wassam. And it's like, you know, that sounds a little bit terrorist, doesn't it? And they pulled out the thing and they went, who is Al Wassam? And I was like, it's my boy from Hounslow West. He can't, like, and they were like, where does he live? And I'm like, fucking hell.
Where does he live? I mean, it's on the business card.
Yeah,
you can see where he lives.
Scissors on the card.
That looks dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, it's terrible, man.
That was fucking sus.
But you know what? It's like the only world that I've known. It's a post 9/11 world, isn't it? Like, because when 9/11 happened, we were kids. So yeah. As an adult, I've only lived in a post 9/11 world. So I've always been used to that.
Yeah,
I think it's, I was in Ghana, really.
Yeah, it's just.
I think.
On holiday.
Something like that, yeah.
Everyone remembers where they were. Well, you were in.
I think I was in Ghana, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what the reaction was like?
It was kind of, ooh.
Look at that.
I might make it long to get home.
I remember I was in college at in King's Cross. Remember, I was in a philosophy class studying
as you do.
David Hume, who was a philosopher, you know what I mean? Yeah. Philosophizing. Oh. And
I used to wear turtlenecks.
I remember getting a text from my mate just saying, yo, this shit has happened. And I remember like having this weird, like, kind of like Dawson's Creek kind of moment of you know, going, oh my God, right now I'm living in a world that the rest of this class aren't currently living in because they don't know that this has happened.
Yeah.
And I looked around at their faces.
Weird power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Did you know what you should have done at that moment? You said, fuck it.
Yeah. That's
it. Guys, I can't take this anymore.
You know what's jokes? Yeah. Like, because, you know, it's that thing everyone remembers where they were on 9/11.
Yeah.
I wrote this script at uni, yeah, which was called Where Were You? Mm. That's what it's called. And it's just about, and it's about my real life story, what happened to me on 9/11.
Okay.
My boy got jacked, yeah, for his phone, his 3310. Yeah, he got jacked. Man. And it was like by 10 Somalian guys, yeah.
No more.
In Hounslow West, yeah. And I remember they were like, you know, then he called his brothers and we found the guys and we got them. We were in this state. His brothers were like searching all the boys' pockets for to get his phone back. All of a sudden, some little ute just ran out and he went, someone just blew up the White House. And it was like, obviously very wrong, wrong information. But then it was like, everyone just stopped. And we went to this shop, like people who've just jacked us. And we went to the shop and we were just watching the news and literally everyone just like frozen. Like,
did they give the stuff back?
We didn't find the phone, man. It was, I remember his older brother, who was quite religious, he left him with a little thing and he was like, just remember, he goes, Allah is watching. And I was like, fucking hell, bro. So intense. for 33-10. I was like, it's like, you know. Wow. But yeah, that's why that was my 9/11 experience, bro. But it was weird.
The microcosm, you know, the
Man, but you know what? I remember literally, it was the effect was so quick. Like literally a week after, and in the script, that's what I wrote. It's about this girl he likes, and he had a rap battle in school. He impresses her. Then 9/11 happens. His mate gets jacked. Yeah. Then literally the next day, he goes into school, and the same girl, this white girl that he was trying to chirps, she don't even speak to him now because they, you know, they released that it was the Arabs who did, and it was
for so many people.
Because before that, when you think terrorists, what do you think? Before 9/11, Ireland, IRA.
If it's Die Hard, then it's Russians,
yeah. IRA.
Timothy McVeigh, they're Christian kind of right wing. Oh, no, like,
they have mental health problems.
Yeah, exactly. If it's white, then they're not terrorists. He broke up with his girlfriend. It's not terrorism. Exactly, it's normal.
His dad didn't hug him enough.
Don't put him in jail.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just give him a talk show.
But I mean, it was literally like the effect of it was instantaneous to a point where I remember I didn't go on the trains after, you know, the 7/11 bombings and the Brazilian dude who got shot on the underground
Menendez,
he got shot like 9-10 times.
Yeah, that was
and I didn't go on the tube for I don't know, like a few weeks or so. Just I was shook after that. I was like, what if I'm running to get a thing and then this happens and that happens? And it was just like, man.
Because people were trigger happy. Like,
mate, they were just like, you know, and we're lucky we don't live in America because of that shit. You'd be always be paranoid with that kind of stuff. And you don't even have to be anything. You can just be
any reason.
You know what I mean? Mm. It's just like, but yeah. I mean,
they're just so ready in America. They're just ready, anything.
Man. So, I mean, that's when everyone has guns. That's what it is. It's fear, isn't it? Give everyone guns. Put paranoia into the system, and it's like, you know, you don't trust anyone, you're suspicious. It's a horrible, horrible environment. That's why I'm kind of happy sometimes I live in, you know, that we live in London, because we haven't really got that, thankfully. We've got it to just a level.
Stop and
we're
search.
We're even a
madness.
Little bit more passive about racism.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Like, in what way? Like,
if any person that's like major famous in Britain was to be publicized in a way that made them look like a racist, the backlash would be instantaneous.
In a weird way, you would argue we have much more freedom of speech here. Like we're more, but then at the same time, like you said, the backlash to anything, if anyone fucks up, it's like, no, we need to make sure that what they said was wrong and they need to
pay for
it.
But there's certain people that are immune to this, like, you know, eating people or like, you know, supremely upper class.
Who's eating people?
Who's eating people? Stop eating me. No, but anyone that's upper
hierarchy.
Class that went to eating or if you're a Tory, you're totally immune from this. You could do whatever you want if you're a Tory.
Yeah, but then fuck them. They don't come to ends. David Cameron hates the mandem.
It's true. So Koji, the question I wanted to ask you is, you had 23 Winters come out very recently, which is fucking sick, man.
Yay.
I mean, it's too good. Like, this is not just me blowing smoke, but like it's obviously Kwame Nkrumah,
big tune,
and that tune is so sick. And especially like when I DJ for Koji, that is like so much fun to do because it's such a like you know, the beat is incredible, like the production's incredible, like obviously it's stripped back. And you do this thing where you start like, and you do it live as well, and I try and tell people this when I describe your music, where you can sit back and you're with the beat and then all of a sudden with your voice you're just like, even though the beat hasn't got that much more aggy, you feel like you want to fight somebody.
Because you're just like, fucking hell.
And that's fucking great about Kwame Nkrumah, is that the chorus comes in, you know, like, you know, everyone wants to be Tony Montana and like you want to be Kwame Nkrumah, and that is such a poignant, you know, the poignant chorus. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what I was, oh yeah, I do. Right, so 23 Winters came out. And the thing that I absolutely love that I wanted to ask you about and talk to you about on the podcast is that, have you explained, is your dad hadn't heard your music.
No.
And then you put up a tweet when 23 Winters came out and it charted and did incredibly well. You put up a tweet of two photos of your dad in concentration. Very, very moving photos of your dad just listening to your album for the first time. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about that.
I've got a drink for that. That was an emotional one.
It was incredible.
Right, so 23 Winters is my EP that turned into a bit more of an album project once it came out. And on that project, the whole kind of narrative of the project is based around a conversation I have with my dad. And the duality of both our lives, speaking on how he came from Ghana and over here, and how he had to, he came from Ghana to over here, and he, how he had to adjust, and all the things he kind of encountered and things he saw, and certain historical moments for him. And then throughout the music, I'm talking more so about my experiences. And that whole thing, that whole process was weird, because it was like my dad was becoming more aware that I made music. But I think for him, he's always just kind of trusted in the fact that I'll be okay. So he's never really forced me to do anything. Do you know what I mean? He's just kind of like, anytime you ask me a question like, so like, how is this going? And I always tell him it's going well, and I can name things that kind of prove that it's going well. But a lot of the time it flies over his head and it doesn't matter to him. So I had like a whole summer period where I was just doing mad things. Mad things were happening for me. Like first TV spot, first tour and all that kind of stuff. And I come back and I told my dad, and it was just like, like, he didn't understand none of it. Like, none of the things that I was naming.
No context.
Yeah, he just had no recollection of it. So he was like, I don't, yeah, cool. I think once he listened to one other record. It was the first version of Kwame Nkrumah.
Right.
And after he heard that record, he said, yeah, I'm proud of you. And I was like, okay, cool. I know what I need to do. Yeah. So I had a whole other project that I scrapped, and I made this project.
Oh, wow.
So, and that was the only record he had heard from, man. So everything's been done. It's come out. And it'd been out for maybe a week before I played it to him. And the day I was going to play it to him was the day it was coming out on iTunes. And the night before, I was just depressed. I don't know why. I was just sad. I just thought,
it's so normal when a record comes out for you to feel alone.
I just thought, like, have I done enough? Like, because I'm not signed. I don't have mountains and mountains of PR. Posters of me aren't everywhere. I'm not going to come on after fucking Coronation Street with, like, Out Now on a Woolworths advert or nothing like that. Like, I'm from ends, innit? I've got Instagram, I've got Twitter, I've got me. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm saying? So,
standard.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, cool, whatever happens, happens. But I didn't, it was nerve-wracking to be in a space where people could judge you publicly and say, oh, well, he didn't do this, or he didn't do this, he didn't do that. So I was like, you know, if people want the music, they can have it. So we put it out. And I remember after like 20 minutes, it went to like number 25 in the charts or whatever. In the hip-hop
and that's
charts,
like, hip-hop charts.
In the hip-hop charts. And I was like, is this normal? I kept asking people, like, what does this even mean? So I thought, bun it, I don't understand it, so I don't care. So then I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to go play my music to my dad. So I've jumped on the train. This is maybe an hour now, but it's been out for about an hour. Jumped on the train from Hoxton to Caledonian Road. Gone to my dad's house, sitting in there. And I think as of just before I got to his house, because his house doesn't really have that much reception, I checked it. And I think it was on like number 9 in the hip-hop charts. So I'm like, whoa. I kept going, all right, fuck it. I don't get it, but I feel like this is a mad thing, but I'm just going to leave it as that. Then I played it to him. Now I've gone there and done the small talk and that. Sat down, he sat down, put the headphones on him, and he just sat in almost like a praying position. The album is 45 minutes. He didn't move.
Wow.
Like, he did not move once. And I stared at him for 45 minutes because I could hear the rest of the music, the kind of excess from the headphones. So I'm like, I know what part you're at.
Yeah.
This is a vibe, or you should
be. Yeah, you should be.
You know what I mean? You should be on a million right now. You crazy. Didn't move. Just sat still. And I think, do you know what I realized? Yeah, is that he only cared about what I was saying.
Like, listening to the lyrics.
Yeah, from top to bottom, he cared about what I was saying. And for me, it was exciting to know that he could come out the other side knowing I did not chat shit once.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, everything I said on that record is factual. Like, from talking about, like, from ends and the cycle of being a part of street life to the fact that my dad was a member of the CPP, which was a Ghanaian government political kind of, like, people party around the same time that Kwame Nkrumah was kind of trying to become president. Remember, like, every time I'd go see him, he'd tell me about Kwame Nkrumah, and I wasn't really that, like, in tune with my own culture, so I'm going, who is my man? Do you know what I'm saying? And every time he's talking about it, I'm going back and doing research, and I'm going, rah, like, this story is a mad thing. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, this is a whole country's independence. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and he battled for it. And even after he became president, there was still kind of like a, that whole, I like to think of it as a crabs in a bucket effect, where even though he was in a position where he could make certain decisions, certain things pulled him down. And he didn't even end up dying in Ghana. Do you know what I'm saying? So he didn't die the heroic, celebrated champion. Mm. It was still kind of like a mixed and matched story, which is maybe why it's not told more. Do you know what I'm saying? But then I'm thinking, bro, what is being fucking put out in music?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be Hefe. Everyone wants to be, like, do you know what I'm saying? And tote guns and do all that stuff, bro. More time, if a gun was in your face, you'd shit yourself, innit? Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, Tony Montana's not about just wearing nice shit and having a nice watch and wearing Balenciagas and all that kind of stuff, like, do you know what I'm saying? You've got to be about it. Exactly. Trips up to Cunch don't mean you're a fucking drug
dealer. No, but people forget how Scarface ended. Like, people reference Scarface. He's probably the most referenced movie of all time in hip-hop.
Yeah. Yeah.
People forget what the fucking message was. And dying on the blimp, world is yours. It's a fucking message there, man. And that's the thing. You can't, there's only two ways it's going to end in that life.
I completely get the understanding of why that kind of character would be,
of course,
do you know what I mean, alluring to people. But then at the same time, I'm like, my thing is this: it's not even just about Ghana, innit? Like, big up Ghana. When that song come out, Ghana was basically, what is it, 59 years independent? I need to double check that, but it was a mad thing. If it's not 59 years and it's less than that, or it's more than that, Skepta gave me rum.
So, I'll edit it out, don't worry.
Either way, yeah.
I'll put a voiceover of the exact.
It'd be like, Ghana was 54 years.
But for me, it was more so about, like, wherever you're from, if there's somebody that you can look towards and understand and sonically project their story within yourself, and maybe not even try and, like, completely emulate, but the ideas of resilience, perseverance, forward thinking, pushing, all that kind of stuff. If there's somebody within your culture that you can champion, then say it with your chest, B. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember having to be shook, like, when a supply teacher come in and I was shook, they couldn't read my name, so the class was gonna laugh at me. Fuck that. My nuts are big and beautiful. Allow me.
It's true. Bro, but it's like
the
what
name, name of your right. next record.
You know, like, not even knowing about your own culture is sad, because you grow up and we don't, in school, we don't learn obviously anything about that. We learn about World War II and all that shit. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, as you get older, you know, like, I think for me, my thirst of knowledge becomes more and more. Like, when I was younger, I didn't want to know. I don't want to do
it's
that.
It's also because your family aren't cool. Like, when you think about your parents,
it's,
you're
not.
Like, as a kid, you're like, oh, well, it's just your parent. You know, I'm not, they're annoying. You know, I think about, like, the stuff that my granddad did. You know, he was in the Free French. You know, he fought the Nazi. He escaped from Tunisia to join the French Foreign Legion. At 15 years old, you're like, wow, this guy.
They've lived, bro.
They
have lived lives.
Crazy.
I think it's something that you should reach. The same thing with my gran as well, like, her story, and, you know, like, even just my mum and my dad's story. I mean, this shit they've been through is just so mad. They had to go through that, and it's weird being a first generation, second generation person. Like, we gotta understand how young our history is in our story. And the more and more the generations go, the more you lose your culture and your story. And that's why it's great going back and finding those stories and embracing and turning it into something artistic, putting it into perspective is something beautiful. Like, even like the Chabadi G character, he's a comedy character, but it's based on my dad and my uncle and the guys, like, you know, the Brits who came here, and they were just hustlers. They were Del Boys.
The adjustment they had to make adapted to the culture that they were now.
There's a lot of comedy in that. But if you know, when you watch People Just Do Nothing, a lot of people feel sorry for Chabadi because he's a tragic character. And comedy and tragedy are, like, very thin lines. And in the day, Chabaz is just an optimist.
Yeah.
He's a hustler, he's an optimist. Yeah. He, like, you know, he even says, he's one of the first lines I ever wrote with Chabadi G. He goes, look here, mate, I came here in 93 with nothing but £5 and my brother's passport, my passport. You know what I mean? So, like, there's comedy in that, but it's a true story. My dad came here. Yeah. In, like, whatever, you know, 82, 83 or whatever, and he had £5 to his name. You know what I mean? Like, £5 to his name. And it's just like that, and obviously you turn it into a joke, and you think there's pain in that.
You make it happen.
They fucking made it happen, bruv. And it's just like,
I like to think the project done well because it was real.
Yeah.
Because if it can invoke and spark conversations like this, then there must be some truth in the story. Yeah, of course.
Especially if your dad was, like, listening, and we were talking about validation from social media and all that. That kind of validation is priceless. Something from your time. You know what I mean?
Imagine, like, boom. So I played on project 45 minutes, watched him, he sat still, yeah? He takes the headphones off and he says something mad to me. He said, I'm proud of it. Nobody knows what happens with life, and maybe this could be the start of something, like, big, basically. And that was so weird. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That was so weird because it's like, rah, you've just heard my music for the first time. And like, me and my dad had one of those weird relationships, but like, we could always tell we was in sync even the times that we were apart. And now you're kind of like, this is, you've listened to the thing that I'm telling you, this is me. Like, if I took him to my workplace, do you know what I mean? And that kind of stuff, like, I just put him in some headphones, that's my workplace. You know what I'm saying? And he's like, yeah, this could be the start of something. And and legit, I checked my phone right after that and I was like, Dad, I'm number 5 in the charts. And he was like, that's good. That's very good. Like, because it goes back to that understanding of things. Like, back then, he still had charts. Do you know what I'm saying? So he understands.
He can relate to that.
He's like, whoa, okay, cool, that must mean something. Woke up the next day, me thinking, this ain't normal, so it's going to drop.
Yeah.
Went to number 3, like jumped over Kendrick or something like that. Stayed at number 3 for a while.
Standard, obviously normal.
Bust into the top 40.
Yeah.
And then the whole time, I'm not doing nothing but Instagramming. I'm just going, fam, look at this. Like, do you know what I mean? I had one video where I was just like, mom, yes, I'm number 3. Oh, that's good. Like, do you know what I mean? It was just that real. Like, it was just kind of
so
like,
real.
I was in my yard. So like, real. I didn't do nothing. It's completely natural. So
great. That's the best way, bro. I mean, we the same thing. Well, we've never really been like forcing the show down people. It's a word of mouth show.
You can't do it.
You watch it. You tell your friends. They tell their friends.
It resonates. That's the thing about people just do nothing. It's so, I mean, I could speak personally, but I know a lot of people feel exactly the same way. Is that we experienced pirate radio.
Oh man, people. Yeah, of course.
We grew up. You know, I grew up listening to Heartless in school. Like, you, we know what this is.
You know that. Yeah.
And so to hear that, it's so real.
It's very
to
real.
To see people
just,
because
we all lived it,
innit?
We all MCs. We all used to do that shit. But you know what? It comes down to, like, on the surface of it, it's a pirate radio show about old school garage, but really, like, on the core of it, what it's about, which I think a lot of great comedy is about, is a delusional characters, which is someone who thinks they're up here but really they're not. But the beauty of all of it is that they're not bitter. What they are, they're content in their own little shitty world. So, like, you know, he's got his little boys there who are hyping him up. He's the best MC in the galaxy.
Yeah.
MC Grinders, he thinks he is the best MC in the galaxy. Chabuddy thinks he's a ladies man entrepreneur. He thinks that in his world he is.
You don't get him.
Yeah, in his world, B. You know what I mean, in his world, ready, he is. Yeah. And that's funny, honey, because, you know, like, it's like, watching someone delusional and the confidence that someone says something that, no, I'm sick, what are you on about? You're like, wow. Like, that delusion is always funny.
Word of mouth is imperative, man. Like, oh, man, my whole thing is, like, put the art back in the hands of the people. Do you know what I'm saying? I remember the first time I even came into knowledge about your show is after Roll Safe.
That's the mad one, yeah.
Roll Safe. So Roll Safe's come out. My boy, he's a proper, like, he writes comedies into it. Yeah. So he's like, yo, you need to check this out. So I watched the Roll Safe thing. And he's like, yeah, he's inspired by people just do nothing. And I'm like, oh, what's that? Da, 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 da. And he showed me a clip. So this is why, when you showed me the clip again, I recognized it. And I was like, where? How did I put two and two together? But it's that cycle of inspiration. If something comes 100%. Out and it's real, it goes on to create other great things.
And that's what we, personally, just speaking, I'm so proud of the Roll Safe thing. Because he came out and he said he was inspired by people just do nothing. And, you know, he even hollered us before he did it. He just hollered us and said, you know, he showed love. And then to see that he's come up the same way, you know what I mean? He's, you know, but he's about his acting, like, he went to drama school, but he used YouTube and he's fucking amazing, you know what I mean? And we love that, to see that that's what we are spawning. And we only want more of it because it's inspirational.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we only started, what, like, this is our third series, and we've, you know, we've reached heights now which we wouldn't have never dreamed of, and he's going to do the same, and then whoever's inspired off that's going to happen, and that is a great thing, you know. Forget all the fame, the hype. If you can actually inspire people to create this art, whatever it is, music, comedy, film, it's moving our culture forward. And that's, like, guys from, you know, London, people didn't really expect much of us. We weren't given the same opportunities people had. We had to work a bit harder, you know, just from my own point of view. I had to work double hard, you know what I mean, to get where I am. So if I'm inspiring people to do that, then that's more than it.
And that's that's a culture of inspiration that is very beautiful. It's a very beautiful time for it, and it's a beautiful moment for to have a piss break, because I feel like this is exactly that moment. Welcome back to the Thanks for Trying podcast.
Fuck David Cameron.
Allegedly.
Welcome back. And yeah, we've had a piss break. And also,
I didn't pee.
Allegedly, we've had a piss break. And at this point, the tradition, the Thanks for Trying tradition of doing a shot. Actually, I didn't even hand you the things. These are our special shot mugs I do every time. They're very floral and very nice. And also to big up the sponsor of this episode, which is Red Leg Rum, which is actually really delicious. Spiced rum.
Yeah, it's nice, man.
It's really good. So big up Red Leg. And shout out to Poppy at High Spirits for... hooking up. So big up yourselves. And yeah, cheers to Koji and Asim for coming through.
Cheers, brother.
Cheers. All right.
Spicy. Jazz.
Delicious.
It tastes like jazz.
Jazz. Yeah. So we were just in the piss break. We were talking about the thing which unites us, which is rap.
Yeah.
And more specifically, Drake.
Oh, you're gonna get me.
Hey, it's got us talking though. Like, you know, it's a talking point. Yeah.
Everyone's got an opinion about Drake. You know, big time. And I don't mind Drake. I really like, you know, because you think you could do an. Someone said this to me the other day. I could do an entire set, a DJ set in a club, just playing Drake records.
Easy. And it would bang.
It would bang.
Yeah, 100%.
It would.
So you're like, I can't be mad at that. No. Like, I'm, you know, in fact, I'm the opposite. I'm quite pleased.
Please, makes life easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got a lane. He's playing his lane. Mm. Big up Drake.
That's what it is, bro. It's about, you know, you're moist and you know you want to... No. But what I was saying, it's the moisture. Yeah, I expected moisture, high levels of moisture. And that's what I got. And I wasn't pissed at it. I was, you know, but at the same time.
And we're talking about views. We're talking about the new
views.
Album.
Yeah, okay. I'm talking about views. And I think, you know, I think it's tough, like, for anything to say 2 years, yeah, this is my album coming out. It's the expectation. It's like almost impossible to live up to. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
man, not if you're Drake level, man.
No, but I don't think he's that kind of artist, though. I think if Kendrick said, I'm going to make an album, it's going to come out in 2 years, he would deliver. And it would be a fucking cinematic masterpiece, poetic, beautiful.
Because even Untitled, Unmastered, which was throwaway songs, was
brilliant,
just like
brilliant.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like,
It was beautiful. And I just think as a progression as an artist, I don't think it was what I kind of expect. I like the theme. I read later that he had a loose theme to the album about summer and winter, and like, you know, the summer tunes are like,
I mean, that's
dance,
that's definitely
that.
Not a theme, that's just going through the seasons.
That's probably well, that's kind of what he was saying. But it was quite vague because he was like, it starts off in the winter, then it's summer, and then it's back to winter, and I was like, all right, like, that's more like he did the album. He's like, we need a theme for this shit.
My theme is, like, to have the songs go like sequentially through 1 to 20. Yeah, that's my theme.
It's not like how Kendrick could break down to Pimp a Butterfly, or like, you know, like an MF Doom like food album, and you break it down, you're like, fucking hell, this guy put some.
Yeah,
he had a plan.
It was
for this.
It was the best stuff on the hard drive.
Yeah,
you think so?
Our album cover was one of the worst album covers I've ever seen in my life. Terrible album cover.
I mean, also theoretically, it's not even possible.
No, exactly.
I mean, I'm just looking at it from like, I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of someone, you know, I'm a bit afraid of heights. So I look at that and I'm like, there's no way if I'm afraid of heights that Drake is not afraid of heights.
Yeah, he's moist. He's definitely afraid of heights.
If he's afraid of heights, he's not sitting on the top.
Can let me ask you a question though. You know, like, everyone's like saying that he's like, you know, we were saying earlier about like the whole trying to beg the UK roadman culture or whatever. Yeah? Like, we see it as people from London, we see that he's got the fade, he's got the Stony. It's very London, isn't it? He's on the grind, he's coming up with Section Boys and I would say yes, he is influenced by that, but I would also, like, I think people forget that he's Canadian. And in Canada, like, I was in Canada in 2009 and we were like with the locals, we went to house parties and that, and bruv, they speak pretty much the same slang as us. Culture, that patois influence is heavy out there. So I was out there saying safe and seen and all that kind of, I didn't have to, I wasn't, when I went back to New York, I had to curb it. They were like, bro, like, you know, what, safe? What do you mean safe? Scene? Like, what does that mean? It's just like, I had to watch what I was saying because it was like, but they speak the same kind of.
There's so many similarities. Well. Yeah, so many similarities of Canada because it is, you know, the Queen influence, you know, man. All that stuff. Also, as a total side note, is that I have a weird obsession with, for me, the greatest TV show of all time.
What, Trailer Park?
No. It's even deeper than that.
Go on.
If people that know me will know this already.
Is it Degrassi?
No. It's a TV show called Due South.
Oh, you know, I've never seen that.
Is that porn? Right.
Yeah. It's not porn. It's basically about a member of the Canadian Mountain Police called Benton Fraser, not to be confused with Brendan Fraser, as a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Is the character is called... just did it. The character is called Benton Fraser, Canadian Mountain Police. He's a Mountie in full Mountie garb. That his dad gets murdered at the beginning of this, the series, right? And he travels to America, to Chicago, on the trail of the killers of his father, right? And that's
is it
the
a comedy?
Premise.
What is it?
It's a kind of, it's a
dark
comedy. It's a dark comedy. Okay. And then he links up with a member of the Chicago police, a tough talking policeman called Ray Vecchio, okay? And so the entire show is like the fish out of water, Brendan Fraser of Canadian Mountain Police with his deaf dog Diefenbaker, and together they solve crimes, okay?
Okay.
Now this show was my favorite show of all time. I've got every episode on DVD. I'm a little bit obsessed with it. I love this show, okay? Now, what brings me back to Drake is that no one else apart from the UK, not even the UK, the England market, because it was shown on BBC Two, and Canada, has any idea what the fuck this show is. Americans have no idea. Like, it was shot in Chicago. Like, Kirsten Dunst was an episode. Like, the shit was, you know, it was a sick show, but no one knows.
Yeah.
And somehow that relates back to the fact that Canada and UK.
I'll check it out. It's high praise.
You need to check it. It's incredible.
I've heard
good.
Juice. I'll put it in the name.
I wanted more.
Sorry.
I wanted more from Views.
Oh, I thought you meant from Juice South.
But more tracks. I had 20. Oh, you mean more in general?
I wanted 40.
I wanted 50 tracks.
What, more passion? More like...
I don't know. I thought, yeah, because this is a hip-hop conversation. I thought he batted at Meek in it. Yeah, I thought, yeah, cool. You had him up.
He did him over.
But realistically, all Meek wanted people to focus on is that Drake don't write his bars. Yeah.
Which was exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you listen to Views...
Yeah.
Oh, bruv, you're right.
I personally didn't... Like, after actually all of that coming out, I thought, rah, am I even hearing Drake anymore?
Yeah, bruv. And, for real. I was thinking that the other day.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not. Because realistically, you can hear what he's doing in the acts he puts on.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? So... It feels like he'll put on an act, like he'll put on like an artist and be like, yeah, cool, here's a free ball. I'm Drake, so I'm going to lift your career and it's going to be amazing. But then at the same time, he starts mimicking the way they speak or the way they rap or the way they do certain things.
Or even they sing with like Party Next Door weekend. They ghostwrite for him too.
Yeah.
Yesterday I heard one of my favorite Drake songs is Legend.
Right.
I just love that song. I like the build up of it. I like the progression. I like the way it drops. That feeling it gives you. It's quite euphoric. It's quite. And then I heard the reference track. It's a Party Next Door tune, isn't it?
Oh no!
And I heard the ref, bruv, like every bar, every melody, and it's like if I die, I'm a mother. And I love that song because I'm thinking to myself like, if I die now, I'm a legend. Like on my ego shit, you know what I mean? It inflates your ego like that, but that's good. It pumps you up. Yeah, and I'm thinking that's such a personable track because it's true. Drake dies today, he's a legend. It's true.
So, how much do you think then the ghostwriting takes away from your you connecting to
it's
an artist?
It's what Koji was saying, bruv. It was like when I listened to that, I kind of think. And plus, he's like, you know, he's doing a little bit of patois-ing, a bit of his rude boy dance sort of thing. That's not Drake. But then what is Drake? Is Drake the Atlanta thing? Is that him? Or is it the Canadian middle-class guy? He just so... Because
he didn't start from the bottom.
He's a great
But this is the joke's thing, though. Is that
I don't know who he is.
This is the only time...
I don't know who you are, Drake.
This is the only time he's done it this fucking bait, though.
Yeah.
Maybe just to us, because he's come over here this time. But realistically, if you think about every Drake album, he starts talking about how a specific city... has influenced his sound. There was that whole Houston period where he was slowing down everything and he was chopping up and all that kind of stuff and boom, boom, boom. And he tried to carry it through. But this is the first time to me it felt like, rah, I can see what you're doing, B.
Also, because when I heard him say the words Pond Road on the album, I was like...
I cringed when he said that.
He's been listening to gigs non-stop.
But here's the thing though, he is a businessman and he's putting together product. That's how I see it now. He's a manufactured like kind of brand.
Yeah.
Drake, you know, like, you know, brand gets thrown around. He is the what you would call a brand because he's getting all these writers, all like the best guys from Canada, really, isn't it? Mm. Like, and even in America, the ghostwriters, but like the ghostwriters he has for this album, you can just see that, you know, he said, I want this and I want that feeling. And but bro, it really did disappoint me when I heard that reference track, because I was like, it was like every bar, even the rap, even the rap bit, even the, like, because, you know, Party Next Door raps as well, but it's like kind of sing stuff. But even like the chorus, the way he dropped everything, the beat,
it makes me think, Rob, what is, like, I guess my generation per se want from music anymore? Because I remember, like, coming, like, even as a youth, if I, like, my favorite rappers, I needed to know they could bar as themselves on anything at any time. Do you see what I'm saying? And whereas now it's kind of more so about, like, yeah, who's got the banger, how quickly.
So how do you feel? So, do you feel the same way about, say, someone like Dre, who doesn't, you know, obviously doesn't write any of his lyrics?
Dr. Dre,
yeah, or like. Or even, for instance, Kanye on, like, where he didn't even write Jesus Walks. You know,
I see them both. I see Dre as a producer. I've never really seen him as a rapper. He's got that delivery, a great voice as a rapper, but I've never, and he's never claimed to be a great lyricist.
Yeah, so you don't feel like maligned.
And with Kanye as well. Kanye's always been a producer and an artist, so I felt like he's always put in a product. And for him, it's more of an art thing. And in art, you always get people to help you, and visually, it's not always just one person, never one person. But like Drake, like, you know, like I was a bit shocked by that.
But you'd feel upset if Nas came out and, like, you know.
Oh, well, that would never happen. But of course, but like, if you look at Drake's early influence, which was Fonte from Little Brother, and if you study Little Brother, and you realize, I mean, Fonte mastered that stuff, but Fonte could never really make it to the, you know, like, present it in a way which was for the mass audience. But like, Fonte is a lyricist. Fonte is definitely writing every single fucking bar, and I mean, sometimes I listen to Drake albums and I think the stuff he's talking about is so personal. I know he wrote that stuff, but then it's like, you know, the other songs were a little bit more like songs, they're bangers. I'm like, did he?
So how do you feel about when you hear something that always makes me really sad, Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You? How do you feel when you hear that song and you know she didn't write it?
That's minor. You know what? Because I always knew from a young age Prince wrote that song, and I know it's about his. I know that she related it to her mum, which I think is different for songwriters. If you can take something that someone's been written for you and relate it to your own thing, like, did you know that Royce da 5'9" wrote The Message for Dr. Dre with Mary J. Blige? Yeah. That's a personal song. He's talking about Eazy-E. He's talking about all these people. Yeah. His brother dying, and Dre conveyed it. He took it and he used those lyrics, and he did. You know, he related to it. He kind of emotionally attached himself to it. Same thing with Sinead O'Connor. Like, obviously everyone knows the cry and the single teardrop. Mm. But she was thinking about her mum who passed away. So it's like, it doesn't matter who wrote it in that avenue, because songwriting in pop has never been like, well, you don't write your own pop songs, you pussy. Like, it's never been like that. But with bars, if you're a rapper, like, you need to take pride. I think it comes down to identity as rappers, because we, like, you know, like, in terms of music, it's about where you're from, it's your family, it's where you grew up, it's your friends, it's your lifestyle. Yeah. And if people are mimicking that for you and writing it for you, it's not going to be as sincere, man.
Of course.
But yeah, but at the same time, like, now it's out there. I want someone to kind of question him on it.
Drake now is risen to the level where he's actually just a machine. And because he's a
brand.
Machine, the brand is too strong. I feel like his finesse team is doing bits for him.
Oh, man. Big time. Bits. Fucking amazing.
I hope that's the actual name for the department that does finesse.
Yeah. Are you moist? Do you not write your own bars? Contact the finesse team.
And he just matrixes everything. He's just not had to address none of it.
He doesn't at all.
He's just kind of gone.
And it came out.
Cool. Yeah, it's just like,
It's public knowledge.
I thought it was bullshit.
He tried to do it in a way where it's just like, niggas is trying to kill me. like his life was in danger. Yeah. He's like, Drake, someone found your life is old hard drive and your Vax.
Your life is definitely not in danger. Yeah. Do you think it's the finesse team that's telling him to dress or to follow the UK kind of angle?
I think he probably really likes that shit.
Yeah,
I reckon he's got a Netflix account. Top Boy's on Netflix. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think it's just new to us because we haven't had that before. We haven't had what we've done as being cool unless we're a character in Snatch, you know what I mean?
That we fucking made it wavy. And if do you know what I mean? And as soon as we get gassed and think, oh yeah, Americans, they like it. Yeah, it's like, fam, I've got friends in music from America that I really enjoy their stuff, and I think talent wise, concept wise, ability wise, they're far ahead and they're amazing. And I build genuine rapport with people. But as an overall allure, no, that's dead. No more. You're from America, so you're looking at my whole scene with like a little bit of a, I'm gonna help you out. Suck your mum, rude boy, because we're Nang too, innit? And we're actually slightly more Nang than you. I can say I grew up around Gram. I can't even tell you I grew up on Gram. There's bare Gram things I don't know because I didn't care that much. But like, and I'm never going to beg it.
And a lot of people do now.
Yeah, allow it.
Oh man,
beg it.
I remember when
because even though I wasn't on Gram, I know when you're begging it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know, I'm like,
yeah, same. Oh, yeah, and it was part of my culture, but I wasn't a grime kid.
Yeah, I'm never it's a part of your now. Culture. Exactly the but same. the attitude it came from was basically London, because London takes all of these influences. Do you know what I'm saying? And because things start to cross over, just even geographically. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the mixture of Caribbeans in West and how that had effect on the music scene out there and all that kind of stuff, it starts to take effect. So we've seen all that, we grew up through all of that, and now it's kind of like, okay, cool, we don't actually care anymore because it's boring. Like, it's the whole like waiting for them to give a shit is long. Like, people have tried to bust it, didn't work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So now that we've just got to that whole like, right, where's your backbone? Say it with your chest kind of shit. They're trying to come over and now it's like, oh fuck, they've never done this before. So we like, everyone's just on titty, like, bruv, allow it, cuz, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, just keep doing your thing. Yeah. If Americans come and they like your stuff, they like it. Do you know what I'm saying? Respect that. The same way, if my man down the road likes your thing and he's ready to pay for a ticket and not ask you for fucking guest list, and do you know what I'm saying, and come to your thing, stand front row, big up his chest and spit your lyrics, if he likes it, appreciate him more than my man that's just got you're dead.
You know what it is for me, like, even not being a proper garage grime kid, but it's like, it has memories.
Yeah,
it has mad memories when you hear certain tunes, you know what I mean?
Well, also because I didn't, even though the scenes were very segregated, like it was grime or it was hip hop, but to me I saw it as all the kind of the same thing. So I would never say I was grime from day. I bought P's and Q's when it came out on vinyl. I bought
an immaculately written record.
Oh yeah, of course.
I think that transcends. There's a few artists who transcend. Yeah, so Kano, Dizzy, where they transcend.
Yeah, I bought Pies. Yeah, I bought Pow. I bought everything on record, and I was
they
playing
transcended,
them back
though.
To
that was record, just British, one of the like, best written records of all man. Time,
bro. All I got, Kano's album, bro. I love Kano's album. Two of his tracks on there. The one about his sister. He's trying to reconnect with her. And it's about his friend who grew apart. Bro, that shit hit me. Because when you go through this life and you get success and, you know, you leave some people behind, people change.
Yeah,
I've lost a lot of good friends through this success stuff. You know what I mean? It's been weird for me. You know what I mean? And it's like, people don't know how to react to your success, or you don't know how to react to their reactions. So a few of those songs, I really, really resonated with me. You know what I mean? And I love the album. And I think Kano's actually gotten better.
Yeah,
as an artist through the years, I think his pen game is ridiculous.
His flows are crazy.
See that Ruben made that the thing with him the other. You know Ruben.
Big up Ruben.
You know how he does it as well, brothers. Well, he's a G. He just hollered at us on Facebook, and then he started doing all our promo work for Series 2. And now look at him, bro. He's doing like
Ruben Dangor did the artwork for my EP. I Don't Even Like You, where he drew my face.
Yeah,
and then
I saw that.
He's doing the grime portraits, and he's just absolutely fucking.
Snap. My man.
Killing
it. Yeah, you've seen
it.
Yeah, bro. He's a G.
I love Ruben so much. Like, he's such a good guy. And he's such a talent as well.
Oh, man.
So talk through the Corrupt FM live show, because I haven't even witnessed it.
You haven't been. Can I come to it? Whenever you know one, man, we're doing like every festival, annoyingly, every festival. Basically, we're actually going to refine the live show now, but it's consisting of like a garage set with comedy, with a few of our songs we've done. But yeah, it's just like a whole Corrupt FM experience.
Yeah.
I come out and do the intro. There's moments we do, like we play some dancehall, play some reggae. Like if you tune into Corrupt FM 108.9, it's a real pirate radio station. It's like that. Just dickheads on the mic chatting. Yeah. Things go wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just part of it. But at the same time, we never ever break the music for the way you're going to be. Like, because people are at a rave.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear fucking jokes. You want to skank, innit?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you want to skank and then see something and laugh.
Yeah.
So it's like that, innit? But no, 100%. Cool. Whenever you lot want, holler at me. You got guest list for life. Don't hold me now. But like, you know, of course, blah, blah.
Because I went down to see Ruben when he was
at the Tate.
So I came down to Tate Britain. And it was, and I couldn't get downstairs to see you guys. For people that don't know, the Tate Britain did an evening where they were trying to, I guess, curate more, I hate the word, but more urban things. You know? and they had all this stuff going on. It was actually really cool.
It was mad though, because basically it was a 14 and up show.
Mm. Yeah,
so like we forget how many kids fans we have who are kids. We forget that because we think it's not, we don't make it for kids. Mm. We make it for grown and sexy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's levels, isn't it? Yeah, like you can't just watch it and be like, you got to understand it. Lounge. There's references to the show. But anyway, you're all welcome. We're not saying we're not. But obviously, these little dickhead utes, they've never been to a rave.
We love. Keep watching.
So they
keep
were watching. In the Tate. They were in the Tate, and we come out and we do a show. But they're blazing zoots, throwing bottles. We did one song and we had to go because it was just a madness.
So
it was
that
a riot.
Was it. So I was upstairs where they were showing what was going on downstairs.
Yeah,
but
the
upstairs
live stream.
On the live stream on the screen. And then the sound cut out.
Yeah.
Because people were rushing the stage.
Yeah, people
were
stealing shit off the stage.
Stealing shit. Yeah. And then there was riots. There was some in the Tate. Yeah. It was mad. And I was there with Michael Payne. Big up Michael Payne every time. Yeah. And we were just kind of looking at each other going, what?
It's
happening.
People rush the stage to steal.
It's kids, isn't it, bro? The thing is, 18 and up, you go to a rave, you might get waved, you're not gonna act like a dickhead, are you? You're gonna enjoy yourself. Yeah. But these kids, think about it, they're not allowed to go to any of our raves. So for them to see their TV, their favorite TV show, see these guys in person, we came out, bro, just kids smoking zoots, throwing bottles. It was just a madness, fun to see though.
So
fun to see that we can get that kind of excitement.
So fun,
and people appreciated the art as well. People came and saw his art, bro, which is a great thing.
It was such a crazy like juxtaposition because you had all of these paintings for like Monet and all of this stuff, and then you had people writing. Yeah,
no. Let's just say I don't think we'll be invited back. Let's just say. I don't think we're going to get a call back for that shit.
Mental.
But yeah, it was crazy.
You've done some kind of like high art performances in places like that, right? I'm sure you have. You must have at least done poetry kind of,
I've been about a block.
Opening for Ghostface though, bro.
That's going to be fun, personally.
I'm a huge Ghostface Wu-Tang fan, obviously, And, I grew up in his music. I went to go see a Ghostface concert back in the day at Scarlet, Bruv, like one of the worst shows I've ever been to. Yeah, he stopped halfway through. Yeah, and started selling t-shirts on stage.
No.
And then some kid grabbed him and he was like, yo, man, this shit ain't for free, son. He's like, you gotta pay for this shit, man. Woke up, man. The thing is, he admits it. He says, he knows he's a dick. It's like Doom. Mm. Like Doom will openly scam you. He'll say he's the villain. Don't go see Doom live. I'd say that. I've seen him a few times. It's never really.
Mate, I hosted a rave where he
his double.
The double came in, and I was there and to do a DJ set as well. And he came in, Doom. Like, I'm doing the quotation hand things, but like he came. He came in and. I mean, I won't speak on like the business side of things. I wasn't involved in
that. I've heard about that as well.
But luckily it wasn't my night. But I was literally just on mic, like hosting it. And people were and he came on. There's just this guy, just some fat guy with a mask on.
And the audacity.
But I don't even think he was a big guy. I think it was literally, because I was stood next to him. It was some guy just wearing like lots of t-shirts. Some skinny guy.
Some weight, man.
Yeah, and then he pressed play and it was a mix.
But I've now understood that Doom is an album artist. I listen to your albums. I'm not going to go see you live.
Yeah. No. I've been lucky enough to open. I've opened up for Method Man once, and like his show is incredible.
I've seen him before. He's amazing.
Just despite being, I'd gone on enough. I'm going to do my opening set. It was at Matter at the O2. So it's sick venue.
Yeah,
right?
That's a good venue.
Couple thousand people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm up there and I'm like doing my set, just like hyping up the crowd. It was like a sick show, and I'm so amped. All my boys are there. I'm just doing like classics, just bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And then like they had a support act. It was one of like the Wu affiliates comes on, and I'm like, okay, cool. I can go to the bar now and get drunk. So I go to the bar. I start drinking like heavily, and I'm getting real waved. And then the support act come off, and then the promoter comes over to me and it's like, Method Man's refusing to come out. You have to go back on.
What?
And I'm at this point so drunk that I'm like, I don't know what's going on. People are booing, doing all this shit.
Why wouldn't he come out?
I don't even know. I'm not even gonna speculate. But I just go up there and I just had to like I just kept on just playing. I just killed it. I just went off. Just went off on one. I just did this like waved. Set. Have no idea what I played, but it was all right. But they were just. It was a very tough crowd.
It's weird. Sometimes I see DJs who are licked. I'm not gonna say any names, yeah. but they are out of their fucking face. Like especially at festivals and that. Yeah. Like Outlook last year, I saw a few DJs who I thought like he just threw up. Yeah, he just threw up before he went on stage.
I've done that.
Not gonna say any names, but you lot can take guesses. But like, yeah, and I was like, how do you? The set was impeccable.
It's autopilot.
Sometimes it works. Yeah, it's autopilot. You work on your instinct, innit?
Big time. The DJs are still mixing.
Yeah standard.
I've done that so many times, just absolutely smashed, and somehow managed to DJ to the point where I can't stand up sometimes, but I can still mix.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no idea how the fuck that works, but yeah, no, it definitely works. So listen, before I wrap it up, is the final plugs, I guess. So 23 Winters is out now, Koji Radical.
23 Winters is out now. Check my Instagram because I'm going to delete it when I'm famous.
So screen grab it, make sure you screen grab it.
Follow me on Twitter. Hold up my mum. Hold up my dad. Shout out Skeptic. Man like G.
Smell that G.
Yes. Obviously.
That's him.
Big up our studio audience.
Yeah.
Big them up every time.
Fruitball.
Standard. Yeah, same shit, man. People just nothing coming in the summer.
Yeah. Amazing.
Fridays, the Hoff thing on Dave. And then, yeah, we're all over every festival.
Thank you so much to my guests, Asim Chowdhury and Koji Radical. This has been the Thanks for Trying podcast. Make sure you tune in again next month.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much to my guests, Asim Chowdhury and Koji Radical. You've been listening to episode 3 of the Thanks for Trying podcast. Big thank you to Seb White, the producer of the show, and also to Red Leg Rum for getting us all pissed. The Thanks for Trying podcast will return, of course, next month.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.